Good evening, WNUR. You are listening to WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Gabe Shumway.
And I'm Edward Simon Cruz. This is WNUR News at 6. Yin and Yang, Peanut Butter and Jelly, Tom and Zendaya.
Some duos just make sense.
But other pairings are more surprising.
That's why this quarter's special broadcast isn't about the conventional combos. Instead, we'll be looking at unlikely allies.
From figure skating and therapy,
to survivor alliances,
to brand collaborations,
and Rutherford B. Hayes in Paraguay.
Tonight is all about the duos that you didn't expect.
Those stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News, Unlikely Allies.
Skating and therapy might not be two things you often associate with each other, but one nonprofit has figured out how to use the ice to benefit neurodivergent children. Sahana Unni has the story.
Typically, ice skating is just viewed as a fun activity to do with friends or a cool event to watch at the Olympics. While you may have considered the negative aspects of skating, I know I've certainly left the rink with more than a few bruises. Studies have shown that the activity also has many benefits, especially for neurodivergent children. At just 16 years old, Amy G combined the knowledge of figure skating she acquired as a member of the Team USA synchronized skating team with her passion for neuroscience and founded Glide to Growth, a nonprofit that offers free ice skating lessons to neurodivergent children.
I did some research about the intersection of neuroscience and figure skating, and I found it really interesting because there were a lot of therapeutic advantages from skating. And I was really inspired to start a program with neurodivergent kids to skate on the ice.
Now, 3 years later, Glide to Growth has expanded throughout the U.S. and other countries across the globe. Ryan Azadapour founded the Oregon chapter.
Yeah, for sure. So, really, I was always teaching Learn to Skate, which is a part of U.S. Figure Skating's skating program, as like a junior coach, and decided to teach kids who are like neurodivergent or have autism. Was kind of a big change for me, because I mean, typically, like, I guess most kids I would teach and learn to skate would be like very quiet, very shy, and really they would just try to listen to whatever you said. But I feel like it was more of a challenge in a fun way to deal with these kids, as like it was great to communicate them with like sensory details. And I feel like one of my favorite memories was like there's this one boy I teach. At the end of like every lesson we have, we do like a race around the rink, and that's kind of fun.
G estimates she has worked with around 15 children through Glide to Growth, and like Azadapour, she said she has learned new ways to connect with them.
Because I was already familiar with coaching, upon more research, I found out that there's a whole another set of a curriculum for neurodivergent kids. And so kind of going across or using my knowledge from past lessons with other kids, I kind of integrated this new curriculum with my new kids. And so they were able to do more simple tasks and ones that were more focused on what they wanted to improve.
One of the children Azadapour teaches is Lego McRae's youngest son, who has autism.
Because my older son is already doing figure skating, we put the younger son in a group lesson, but it was a little difficult for him because it's a big, you know, large group and, you know, only like one or two instructors, and it was difficult for him to focus for 30 minutes in a large group environment. And so I thought, wow, like private lesson would be nice. And you know, he can get more personal attention from the coach, and maybe, maybe more fun. And so we decided to, do that.
McRae said these lessons have helped her son immensely, both in and outside the ring.
It's not just fun, but also my son is learning actual, you know, like real skills. And so that's amazing. And we can see him improving and also, you know, while having fun. And so that's a really great experience.
While you may not immediately think of ice skating as a form of therapy, Glide to Growth continues to positively impact many families, including McGray's. For WNUR, I'm Sahana Uni.
Gabe, would you call us unlikely allies?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, we both kind of met here from halfway across the country. You root for the Yankees, I root for the Red Sox. There's got to be some discrepancies in our friendship, surely.
But at the same time, I mean, we do have other things that we have in common. You're a Massachusetts guy, both in the sense of the Jensen McRae song and the state you're from. And I'm a Celtics fan. Can I say that?
Whoa, I think New Jerseyans might have a bounty on your head now, Eddie. I'm not going to lie.
I've been putting up with this all quarter. Everyone has been giving me flack for being a Celtics fan. But what can I say?
Yeah, Jason Tatum. I know you're a fan of his.
I very much am.
I mean, you got better bagels than us, but I think we got you beat on seafood.
I wouldn't disagree with that, to be honest. New England is the place to be for seafood, and I'd say that as a big Red Lobster fan. So that tends to be my exposure to most of the seafood stuff.
That place ain't lasting much longer.
Nah, the one right by my house closed. Very bummed out.
Anyway, enough about our unlikely allyship and how we got here. I think it's time to find out about two more people on our staff and how their unlikely ally and alliance, there we go, alliance and Survivor has led to a pretty cool story. So if you've ever wanted to compete on the hit reality show Survivor, reporters Basil Free and Sophia Kesa got the chance of a lifetime this year and got to be on the show. Well, sort of. Here's their story.
The following story contains spoilers for various seasons of Survivor Northwestern. Please be advised.
Have you ever considered voluntarily marooning yourself on a deserted island? A deserted island where you're left to starve and freeze with a group of people you've never met before? And among that group of people, you're expected to make alliances and plans to vote someone off that island until there's only one person left? The sole survivor?
We strangely have, but starving sounds like a lot, and I really enjoy the warmth of my bed. So how can you play Survivor without getting sent to the beaches of Fiji?
Thankfully, Northwestern has a club for that, Survivor Northwestern. Described as aiming, quote, to serve those interested in production and entertainment, creating a diverse and inclusive community for lovers of reality television, end quote, the club puts on seasons of the show for students to outwit, outplay, and outlast each other each year.
Survivor Northwestern's first season began filming the winter of 2020. Originally featuring a cast of 22, the franchise has since gone on to feature 121 Northwestern students, growing a tight-knit community around all things Survivor and reality TV related.
The franchise is now on its eighth installment, titled Sink or Swim. The season features nautical theming and, more notably, Basil and I as castaways.
In honor of unlikely allies, we wanted to recount our experiences playing the iconic game full of alliances, blindsides, and backstabbing, and also speak to production and fellow cast members alike to get a sense about what makes being a part of the club so meaningful.
When I got admitted to Northwestern, before coming to the school, I saw that they had a Survivor Club where you could play or produce seasons with college students. And I was like, oh, that'd be so cool to get my own chance to play without actually being on, you know, the real CBS show where you have to starve on an island.
That's McCormick Sr. and current club president Ryan Kessler. He placed second on season 4 and then went on to join the production team thereafter.
It's the only club I'm in that's not really for any sort of like academic or career purpose, and for that reason it's like far and away my favorite club that I'm involved in on campus, because I think it's just such a special community where so many people that I've met and become really good friends with over the last 3-4 years are people that I maybe would not have interacted with.
Weinberg first year Laurel Bisher, who competed in season 8 with us, shared similar reasons on why she joined.
I love Survivor the TV show, and you know, while watching you're always like, wow, I would be so good at this. And I love a competition, and I love meeting people, and it just seems like a really great group of people to get to know on campus, and also, you know, test my prowess and see if I can do well. Spoiler alert, I did not.
Survivor can also be a way of connecting people in surprising ways who would have never met. As it turns out, during gameplay, Bisher and I discovered we had a big thing in common.
At a point in the game, we ended up on the same team, and through talking, we found out that we are from the same place, which is Cleveland, Ohio. I mean, actually,
yes, hashtag go guards.
Yes, and we found out that we knew like people in common who went to high school together.
While Bisher didn't end up making it to the merge, her Survivor journey may not be over yet. When asked whether she was considering joining production, Fisher expressed interest, citing the community that has been built around the group.
I would like to join prod in the future. That's like the other side of it where you're kind of like behind the scenes and filming and creating everything. I think that's exciting. It is like a really great community of people. And then, you know, if there's the option to play again, like, would I take it? I would consider it.
At this point, you might be wondering what it takes to get cast in a season. That's where Medill senior Jossie Mintz comes in. Jossie is the current head of recruitment within the club. She also happens to be the winner of season 5. Here's what she had to say.
We definitely look for people who are super gung-ho and on board with waking up at 7 a.m. and just putting aside other priorities to make Survivor their priority. And of course, we also want the club to last into the future. So we definitely keep a keen eye for people who express interest in joining the production team after they play.
Mintz also pointed out that oftentimes students from across campus and schools get cast, allowing for castaways to get to meet all kinds of new people.
The season really exposed me to talking to a lot of people and figuring out how to connect to such a wide range of people. As I said, like a lot of theater kids, and that's not really my circle, but I loved, loved, loved meeting them and becoming friends with them.
Though the interpersonal relationship aspect of the game can be difficult. As Weinberg senior Sam Kliss described, the close relationships you form can become difficult to balance with the cutthroat nature of the game.
You do create these deep bonds, these close friendships over the course of the game. And that's really, the votes get really difficult. And you have to remind yourself not to take the game personally, but because you spend so long with everyone, it starts to feel personal and bigger than it is in a way that I think is really, really challenging.
And things did get challenging. As we mentioned earlier, Sophia and I also played on a season together and knew each other going in. We were only on the same team for one round, and it sadly ended with me voting Sophia out.
A betrayal I will never forget.
I initially became interested in playing Survivor Northwestern because of my love for the show. I actually wanted to try out for season 5 my freshman year, but was too scared to apply. Honestly, though, I'm really happy I made that decision. I don't think I was mature enough to handle that kind of dynamic at the time.
This year has been a bit of a rough one for me, especially in the beginning. So when you don't like how things are going in your life, you change them. And Survivor Northwestern was the biggest change I could think to do, and I am so glad I did it.
Playing on this season would genuinely have to be one of the most stressful experiences of my life. It would quite literally take up most of my free time, and my roommates and friends were starting to get worried when I told them about how I'd have to wake up at 6 a.m. Just having to constantly strategize, connive, and even lie to people you barely knew became pretty tolling.
Exactly. I joked to my friends and people in the game that it was such a fun club until you had to go to council. Then it became a full-time job. My GCAL was a mess of strategy sessions and challenges and councils. I was voted out pretty early on. I admittedly played too hard, too fast. While my vote out was, at least from my perspective, a blindside, I distinctly remember feeling disappointed for about 5 minutes, and then I just felt relief because it meant I was going to gain back so much more free time.
I was voted out and became the first member of the jury, effectively becoming the mayor of Ponderosa. This meant that I got to host events for future jury members, including an Easter egg hunt and bowling outing. Honestly, I've been enjoying it much more than being on the actual show since I've been able to gain such close connections with my fellow cast members.
And even though I didn't make the jury, I've been going to watch parties of season 48 of the CBS Survivor with members of the cast and prod team, and have been able to maintain the connections I set up in the game. These people came into my life in a time when I really needed it, and I'm really happy to say that I've been able to keep them in my life since my stint on the show. I'm also going to be joining the prod team for Survivor Northwestern Season 9, so I'll be able to keep this community as I go into the next year, and we'll be able to enjoy the game, but this time from behind the scenes.
So, the question remains, did we survive?
No.
No.
Like, objectively, we did not play very good games.
But are we happy we played?
Absolutely.
And that's what really matters. For WNUR News, I'm Basil Free.
And I'm Sophia Queso.
All right, Edward. This I think we've entered into the fun part of this broadcast. What do we have in front of us?
Let's see. We have Haribo Sour Streamers And I think yours is sour cherry flavored and mine is sour blue raspberry. I don't know why I picked that one. I don't even like blue raspberry.
Yeah, whenever I think of cherry, I just think of like the cough medicine that you take when you're like sick as a kid.
I love cherry flavored things. Cherry flavored foods are the best. My God, this is why I was scared of us becoming friends.
Yeah, the unlikely allyship. Week one of our moving on campus. This is what you got into, a cherry hater.
Yeah, I'm not even going to comment on that. Anyway, our other food today is pretzel crisps from the Snack Factory, and these are buffalo wing flavored. I've had the regular ones, but never buffalo wings.
You big spice and sour guy? I think it's a good combination.
I don't know. I mean, I'm usually more of a sweet and sour guy myself, personally. I love my sweets. So this is going to be a weird experience for me, putting these two together.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one for sure. I mean, I'm not a huge, like I'd never eat like a Warhead, right? That's just not my scene. Buffalo, I don't mind. My thing with spice is I enjoy spice when it's adding more flavor, right? But in a case like this, I fear that it might just be a combination of things. But I think we've decided that it's going to be me first trying this. So Edward will get to laugh at my reaction, and I will step away from the mic while I take a bite of this.
That's right.
I got one wrapped around the other, so we'll see how this goes.
Yep, Gabe has wrapped his pretzel crisp inside a sour cherry flavored Haribo streamer.
Oh, that's nasty. Oh, no. Oh, no. This is a bad idea.
So it's my turn?
Yep.
Oh, wait. I can't say that on the air. Okay. Georgia. Georgia's our producer. Georgia, get ready to use the kill button if we need to.
This has been a time. This has been an experience. This is why we anchor special broadcasts together, isn't it, Eddie? He's eating. He can't talk. It's still. I think I just swallowed the last bit. This is a trip. I safe to say I will not be doing this again.
Some of it stuck in my mouth. This is bad.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what would you put the what would you put this as a rating?
Yes.
For the flavor.
Yes, that's my answer.
Okay, I'd give it about a 3.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it feels bad on the initial taste because you get hit with all of it, but the more and more it's in your mouth, the more and more I feel like I become numb to it. At least not my tongue. I think I'm good to talk for the rest of the broadcast. That was my fear. This combination would render me speechless for the remainder of the broadcast. But we have more unlikely allies to get to, don't we?
We do. I just let myself get overwhelmed by it all, and I think that helped me kind of take it in a little better. All right. Now, Gabe, have you heard of Nike and Ben & Jerry's collabing?
I did not. I do love some Ben & Jerry's, and I'll wear Nike. I think I have Nikes on right now. Yeah, I have some blue Nikes on right now.
What about Peeps and Pepsi?
Peeps and Pepsi? Nah, can't say I've heard those. They got a lot of similar letters, so it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. What about Pokemon and the Van Gogh Museum?
Oh, that one I know plenty of. I have plenty of friends over in the Pokemon community who are waiting very patiently for when all the drops happen. They were on their computers trying to get them as soon as they went down. There was the Pikachu with gray felt hat card that I still see around, and I have plenty of friends who are owning that one.
Well, that's a weird one. But you know what they say, the more unlikely two brands are to collab, the faster they'll get ads up for an absurd crossover. Maybe, not really.
But that's what Georgia Kerrigan decided to look into. Here she is to tell us all about the unlikely brand collaborations, when they work and when they don't.
These days, it seems like anything a consumer could want is already on the market. Ultra-specific life hack gadgets, restaurants that exclusively serve fermented foods, boutique brands where all products are made out of recycled materials. Whatever it is you're looking for, you can probably find it. But what happens when we get bored with our options? When even the highly specialized and curated brands start to feel boring, how do businesses keep customers excited? In the early days of brand collaborations, pairings like an artist and a fashion line or a luxury brand with a mass market retailer made perfect sense. Entirely new customer bases emerged when designer brands made affordable collections. Celebrity partnerships allowed fan bases to not only support their idols, but also have a tangible piece of their persona. If you're lucky, a brand collaboration might be exactly what you never knew you needed.
My favorite collab, at least that I've seen so far, is Say Beauty, the makeup brand. They partnered with this matcha company called Rocky's Matcha, and they made these like little kits with like matcha whisks, like a little container of matcha and like a matcha sift, and then like additional makeup products from Say. And that's like a combination of like my two favorite things ever, makeup and matcha.
I feel like a collab that was really iconic was those Converse X Comme des Garçons shoes that had the little heart on the side, and it was iconic. Everyone had them. Everyone wanted them. I wanted them myself too.
That was sophomore Eliana Amro-Salase, followed by sophomore Joelle Martins. They agreed that a good brand collaboration can successfully merge different demographics.
I feel like a good collab, or at least like if I had a company and it'd be like, who should we collab with? It would be like trying to bring two consumer groups, like different types of consumers, like together to buy the same product. So like if you could get like lip gloss lovers and then WWE fans together to buy the same thing, I feel like that would be great, because like how else are you going to be able to like get these people in the same room to buy the same thing?
I feel like it was also very fitting for like the demographic of Say Beauty makeup users who also happen to be matcha drinkers like myself.
But novelty has a shelf life. And today, brands that don't adapt to the constant consumer expectations of getting something more, something new, can quickly be outpaced by those that do. Plus, the threshold for virality has changed. In a world saturated by content and choices, it takes a lot to capture our attention, let alone turn a profit off of it. But brand collaborations have been doing just that. The perfect collab must be sensible enough that buyers loyal to both brands will embrace the joint product. But the secret to generating buzz and standing out in a crowded market? Absurdity. There was the Van Gogh Museum's line of Pokemon-themed souvenirs, High Smile's Kentucky Fried Chicken-flavored toothpaste, High-Heeled Crocs by Balenciaga. Unlikely brand allies captured the attention, and wallets, of ever-expectant consumers. But if a crossover is more puzzling than fascinating, it might not have the same success. Think Ralph Lauren in Fortnite, or Forever 21 in the snack bar brand Atkins.
I don't understand collaborations that don't make sense for the demographic you're trying to sell to.
Whether people are trying it as a joke or earnestly buying something from their favorite brand, absurd collaborations work. An unlikely alliance between brands catches the attention of customers who never imagined such a crossover would occur. But after discovering so many bizarre partnerships that I could hardly imagine being pitched, let alone followed through on, I had one question. Can a brand collab even be unlikely anymore? To put my theory to the test, here is a list of some real, some fake brand collabs. Try and guess which are which. Tinder and Just Dance. IKEA and The Sims. Duolingo and Uber. Elf Cosmetics and NASA. Kids Bop and Red Bull. Hot Pockets and Patagonia. Drunk Elephant and Dunkin' Donuts. Sorry to trick you, but if you thought any of those were real, you might be proof that we aren't surprised by much these days with increasingly wild marketing campaigns. The good news? Your dream collaboration may not be so unlikely after all.
Okay, so I don't know what the Dubai chocolate brand is, like the original one, but whoever they are, they should collab with Chili's and make a Dubai chocolate lava cake.
For WNUR News, I'm Georgia Kerrigan.
Hey, Gabe, I'm seeing this next story that you did.
Yeah, Eddie?
Am I reading this right? Rutherford B. Hayes and Paraguay?
Shh. Just listen.
Well, here's Gabe Shumway and John Kowalski with more.
My grandfather's plot was too large for the shelf, so it stood 90 years.
To Americans, Rutherford B. Hayes is a blip in their country's rich history of 45 unique presidents. But nestled in the subtropical country of Paraguay, whose landlocked status means they don't even border a shining sea, the 19th U.S. president is a hero. Following the War of the Triple Alliance, a territory dispute broke out between Paraguay and Argentina. In response, the countries called on U.S. President Rutherford B. Hayes to be the arbiter. In the years that followed, Paraguay named a city department, and national holiday in Hay's honor. At the time of the dispute, the United Nations didn't exist, meaning that there wasn't a major precedent for these territorial disputes. With Paraguay having already sent telegrams to the U.S. under the Grant administration, it's believed that the U.S. may have been on Paraguay's radar already. While for some this relationship may have faded into obscurity over nearly 150 years, the two parties still have a unique bond. Today, Fremont, Ohio, where Hayes lived, and Villa Hayes in Paraguay are sister cities.
And one of the things that we've worked on is trying to connect our classroom at our local high school here with our Spanish teacher and our Spanish language classes here at Fremont City Schools with classes in Paraguay.
That's Christy Weininger, the executive director of the Rutherford B. Hayes Presidential Library and Museums in Fremont. She went on to mention that there's currently a bill going through the Ohio legislature to declare a state holiday for Hayes. However, despite Hayes' heroics to the Paraguayan people, Julie Miley, the curator of manuscripts at the Hayes Museum, emphasized that then-Secretary of State William Everts likely played a bigger role.
They bring all this documentation, the maps, the books, all these things, to kind of state their case for which country they should decide for. And that really falls on, I said, the State Department members and Everts. And so then they compile all their findings, and Everts presents this to Hayes, kind of goes over it for his review and says, yep, that looks about right, you know, and then he agrees with it and then signs it. So I think really Everts plays a bigger role in this.
Despite Everts' role, Miley and Weininger emphasized Hayes as an eternal student. His library contained multiple books on Paraguay before the dispute took place. Today, Hayes' legacy looks a little different between these locations. He is celebrated widely in Paraguay for his impact. The war caused Paraguay to lose over half of its population, historians believe. For their people, the awarding of such a large portion of land in the Chaco region was a major source of unity.
It was a big deal. So if you understand kind of the trauma that Paraguay had been through and, you know, there and then to have Hayes decide in their favor, I think just had a significant impact, a tremendous impact on their country.
In the grand scheme of U.S. presidents, Hayes isn't as commonly recognized. The website Sporkle has a quiz where users attempt to name every U.S. president in 10 minutes. After over 15 million plays, just 56.2% of users correctly named Hayes. That's the lowest percentage of any U.S. president. But what is Hayes' legacy stateside? Many know him for his 1876 election victory that gave him the nickname Rutherfraud. Others associate him with pulling troops from the South. However, legacies can often be muddied by the one or two associations that jump to mind. As a result, some believe that Hayes' legacy is misunderstood. But for Miley and Weininger, who have extensive knowledge of Hayes, think of him as a civil servant.
So I think his legacy isn't as robust as those that have served more than one term. But certainly some of the decisions he made, economically, in terms of civil service reform. He was doing a lot of work in civil service reform as part of his presidency, which made him unpopular with both parties. In fact, members of his own party were referring to it as civil service reform. But it was really important to him that people were appointed to government positions because they were qualified.
Perhaps between the nearly 5,000 miles that separate these two pivotal locations, a middle ground between these starkly contrasting legacies exists. For WNUR News and my co-author, John Kowalski, I'm Gabe Shumway.
Hey, Edward, I think as this broadcast is coming to a close, we got to address the elephant in the room. What are some of our favorite unlikely allies? Let's go to the world of pop culture. If you gotta give me one unlikely set of allies that is your personal favorite, who are you going with?
Right. My favorite, this combines my all-time favorite artist with one of the greatest jazz singers ever to grace this planet. Lady Gaga and Tony Bennett. I feel like the first time I heard them, I think they were singing Baby It's Cold Outside for some Christmas ad for like Barnes & Noble or something. I don't remember. Don't quote me on that. Years ago. And I saw that commercial on TV and I was just surprised by, like, you know, because obviously Lady Gaga, she was kind of shifting toward a point in her career where she was kind of getting more grounded with her musical style, incorporating a bit more influence from different genres like country and jazz into her stuff, on top of the pop she usually does. But she also has this just incredible voice that meshes really well with the kind of silky, calm vibe you get from Tony Bennett. And they've done two collaborations together. Their first album came out in 2014. The second one came out in 2021. And Tony Bennett sadly passed away 2 years ago at the ripe old age of 96. But in that time, you know, they've won 3 Grammys. They've garnered a lot of critical acclaim. And I think just being able to see one of the all-time greats, just, you know, having some fun performing with one of today's greatest pop culture icons. That's one of those kind of pairings that crosses generational boundaries that I found really sweet, honestly. So yeah, I think that's mine. What's yours?
I was gonna say, "Baby, It's Cold Outside" is a throw. I cannot think of that song anymore without thinking of that one scene in Elf where Will Ferrell just like covers his eyes and runs to the locker and falls down. It's one of my all-time favorite movie moments. But my personal favorite, I think I'm going to have to go with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. Very random combination of people, but they did 5 movies together. Twins was a fun one. Junior, Last Action Hero. These are some very interesting films where you're seeing this, you know, behemoth of a man who is the governor of California, from Austria, and then you see good old Danny DeVito, voice of the Lorax. He speaks for the trees, and he's speaking up in a lot of cases when he's talking to Arnold Schwarzenegger. But just a fun combination of people. You really got to enjoy those two, and I think that would be my favorite set of unlikely allies. But that is going to do it for the most part for our special broadcast. Why don't you send us out, Edward?
Yes, that's all for this quarter's special broadcast, Unlikely Allies. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893.
You can listen to all of tonight's stories in full on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We had a big crew today. Georgia Kerrigan and Ethan Pan are our producers. Our reporters are Sahana Unni, Sophia Kesa, Basil Free, Georgia Kerrigan, Gabe Shumway, and John Kowalski. I'm Edward Simon Cruz.
And I'm the aforementioned Gabe Shumway. We still have one more week of shows for the quarter. Catch our next newscast on Monday evening. Thanks for tuning in.
And now, back to scheduled programming.